Good afternoon, passengers. This is your captain speaking. I'd like to welcome everyone aboard this podcast. We are currently cruising at an altitude of 35,000 feet, an airspeed of 450 miles per hour. Weather is clear and sunny with a high of 75 degrees. The cabin crew will be coming around in about 20 minutes to offer you a light snack and beverage. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome aboard Pilot Error. I'm Tom Feeney, writer for Wings Chop Movie Magazine. You may know me from such podcasts as The Deep Dive Microcast, Mysteries of the Deep, and Hollywood Hype. This is Pilot Error, where we look at TV shows that went belly up before their time slot. The question being posed today is, when is a TV pilot not a pilot? It could be a show that was immediately greenlit to be a series without a pilot episode. That was fairly rare back in the days of broadcast-only television. Now, streaming services like Netflix and Amazon Prime Video often order entire seasons of series just based on the talent involved. But our subject today is technically not a pilot, but more of a pilot of a pilot, kind of a proof of concept to demonstrate the style and overall vision of the project. Now, this particular pre-pilot is interesting because of its pedigree and its subject matter. It was, in effect, a TV show about TV and called TV. But before we get to the actual pilot itself, we must first look at the individual who created it. A brilliant, mercurial, fiery-tempered comedy writer with a pitch-black sense of humor. Michael O'Donohue. Now, if the name isn't familiar to you, that's not a surprise. Although not particularly camera-shy, O'Donohue's presence was felt, most severely, as a writer. One of his first forays into the world of publishing was in 1968 when Random House Books released his book, The Incredible Thrilling Adventures of the Rock. No, not Dwayne Johnson. It's about a rock in a forest. It's been there for hundreds of millions of years. Not much happens to it at all. The end. Yeah, it's 48 pages of a drawing of a rock not doing much of anything. And a major book publisher released it. They got conned into thinking the book was some kind of deep existential work about loneliness and depression. It wasn't. The joke was literally on Random House. So from that gem of a capitalist prank, O'Donohue was hired as a writer on a then new comedy magazine, National Lampoon. Yes, the same name behind a few good movies and a whole lot of bad ones. So back in 1970, when the magazine began, it was the epitome of intellectual and social satire mixed with a healthy dose of really bad taste. It was a truly great publication. A few years later, O'Donohue's temper got the better of him, and he threatened to quit National Lampoon if his girlfriend, who also worked for the publication, didn't get her own office. His bluff was called, and true to his word, he walked away from National Lampoon. Just before that, however, O'Donohue and his Lampoon cohorts created what is considered a seminal comedy record album. Released in 1973, National Lampoon's Radio Dinner, which was a play on the once popular Frozen TV dinners, was a sonic snapshot of the post-hippie, pre-hedonistic 70s. Everyone from the recently broken up Beatles to then President Nixon were targets for, you know, lampooning. But one snippet written and performed by O'Donohue showcases his rather dark comedic sensibilities.
I used to get a kick out of hanging around the park, because there were a lot of trees and grass and drinking fountains and everything. And I used to go down and sit on one of the benches, you know. Every morning, I'd go down to the park and then I'd feed the pigeons.
What'd you feed them? Popcorn?
No, every morning, I'd go down to this park and I'd feed the pigeons to my cat.
At the time, Radio Dinner was a commercial and critical success, but it's been out of print since 1977. But as of this recording, you can find it in its entirety on YouTube. O'Donohue wouldn't be unemployed for long. In 1975, a young TV producer named Lorne Michaels was looking for writers for his new comedy show. Through a mutual friend, O'Donohue was recommended as a possible candidate to write for NBC's Saturday Night. In fact, O'Donohue had the singular honor of being the first person to ever appear in a Saturday Night Live opening sketch. O'Donohue plays fellow SNL legend John Belushi's English tutor.
Let us begin. Repeat after me. I would like
to feed your fingertips.
To feed your fingertips.
To the Wolverines.
To the Wolverines.
Next, I am afraid.
I am afraid.
We are out.
We are out.
Badgers.
Badgers.
Would you accept a Wolverine?
A Wolverine.
In its place.
In its place.
Next. Hey, Ned exclaimed.
Hey, Ned exclaimed.
Let's boil. The Wolverines.
The Wolverines.
Next.
While O'Donohue wasn't an official member of the performing cast, he did occasionally appear in front of the camera as a twisted storyteller in Mr. Mike's least loved bedtime tales. Now here's part of one segment from 1976 featuring a 14-year-old Jodie Foster.
Oh, Mr. Mike, please tell me a least loved bedtime story.
Well, sure thing, you little imp. Just hop up here on my knee. And I'll tell you the story of the little train that died. Okay, now one time there was a little train. We had to pull a giant load of scrap metal up the mountain. He had never pulled such a heavy load in his life, and so when he left the valley, his little wheel said, I hope I can. But before long, he picked up speed, and now the wheel said, I think I can. Soon the little train was whizzing right up the mountain, and now the wheel said, I know I can. Heart attack. Oh my God, the pain. I left my bills in the roundhouse. And he died. No, really, Jody, that would be the end of the story, but the little train was on the mountain, kind of on an incline, and he began to roll backwards slowly at first, of course, but getting faster and faster, until he was just barreling down the mountain, those wheels just barely on the tracks. Of course, they weren't saying anything this time because they were dead. Now, in the valley, who should be sitting on the tracks but Freddy the Frog, and wouldn't you know it, he's facing the wrong way, so he never sees the train coming at him at 180 miles an hour. Fortunately, Freddy hops off the tracks just in time, and the train misses him, hitting instead a school bus, killing 150, no one over age 9, and the school bus. Now, when the state police arrive at the scene, one of them looks around at the carnage and grisly mutilation, spots Freddy and says, you know, it's wrong that so many human beings should be dead, and this frog should still be alive. And so they beat him to death with a softball bat at the end.
Oh, Mr. Mike, that was the best tale I've ever heard.
Well, you know, Jody, I have a lot more where that came from. Good night. Have you heard the one about the penguin, the soap dish, and the invisible cowgirl? Well, it seems that...
Now, if that cheerful story doesn't give you an idea of the type of humor Michael O'Donoghue specialized in, well, nothing will. Needless to say, his mercurial nature got him into trouble more than once. O'Donoghue was one of those people that seemed to always eventually turn friends into enemies. He left SNL after the original cast, and Lorne Michaels called it quits after SNL's fifth season. Despite all that, someone at NBC thought it would be a great idea to hire O'Donoghue to produce a comedy special for the network. The result was Mr. Mike's Mondo Video. The special was a series of short bits revolving around odd people, places, and things. Some fake, some real, and some truly bizarre. Many of the original SNL cast members appear, including Dan Aykroyd, showing off his unique genetic mutation.
Hello. When the Mondo crew asked me to appear on their celebrity deformity section of the show, I really couldn't refuse, honestly. In fact, I leapt at the chance. I guess you could say I'm a celebrity. Been in the public eye for a couple of years now, and I'm also deformed. In fact, I'm proud to say I'm an actual genetic mutant. Genetically mutated from birth, and that mutation manifests itself in my feet. Now, as you'll see here very shortly, the two sets of middle toes on both my feet are webbed by an actual web of skin, not unlike a reptile. And just to show you that this isn't some cheap makeup trick, I'm going to take a Phillips head screwdriver, and I'm going to pass it on either side of the webbed mass between the toes of both my feet, and then actually take the screwdriver and prod the web of skin here so that you see that in fact it is organic and real and much a part of me. And I'd like you to keep that in mind next time you see me.
When O'Donoghue presented NBC with the final cut, they were appalled. Mondo Video was called vulgar, tasteless, raunchy, and gross. Did NBC really think they were going to get anything else? Well, the completed project was destined to become lost media when a former NBC programming head bought Mondo Video from NBC, transferred the videotape special to film, and gave it a limited release into art house theaters in late 1979. It's as close to getting pure, unadulterated Michael O'Donoghue as mainstream audiences could get. Now, if you're interested, you can actually rent Mr. Mike's Mondo Video on Amazon Prime Video for $1.99. You might love it. You might hate it, but you won't forget it. O'Donoghue was rehired at SNL in 1981, and then fired soon after. Then hired again in 1985, and fired again. Well, his next project after that seemed perfectly suited to O'Donoghue's dark sensibilities. A take on the classic Charles Dickens tale, A Christmas Carol.
Frank Cross is a man of true vanity, whose specialty is inhumanity.
He's fired? It's Christmas.
Thank you. Call the county. Stop his bonus.
Then he saw three new guests. Now, what scares him the most?
Find the ghost of Christmas present.
Is the chance that he's losing his sanity.
Oh, I'm having the weirdest day.
Bill Murray, Scrooged, rated PG-13. Starts Wednesday, November 23rd, at theaters everywhere.
Scrooged, co-written by O'Donoghue, was a box office success in 1988 and has since become a perennial holiday classic. A few years after that, O'Donoghue took one last shot at television. And once again, that shot backfired. In 1992, the Fox Television Network had just celebrated its fifth year on the air. In order to make itself stand out from rivals NBC, CBS, and ABC, Fox was willing to entertain more edgy content. Shows like Married with Children, The Simpsons, and In Living Color were prime examples. Fox was committed to going after a younger demographic with programming that the mainstream networks wouldn't touch. Now, granted, this had mixed results. For every Simpsons, there was a Women in Prison. For every Married with Children, there was the Chevy Chase show. By the way, Chase asked O'Donohue to be his head writer on the ill-fated talk show. He declined. The Chevy Chase show was canceled by Fox after only 6 weeks. So always on the quest for content on the cutting edge, Fox approached O'Donohue in 1991 to create a pilot for a proposed series. The show would be centered around a fictional TV channel, in much the same way as the classic Canadian sketch comedy show SCTV did in the 70s and 80s. The pilot, written by O'Donohue, was simply titled TV. It would show programming from fictional TV channel CRC. The 13-minute proto-pilot consisted of several short vignettes, including commercials, station promos, news breaks, and PSAs. While not as dark and weird as Mr. Mike's Mondo Video was a decade earlier, TV still had some pretty out there ideas, including a cop show with a lead character that, like The Rock, he wrote many years before, doesn't really do much.
Coming up next on CRC, Coma, starring Brian Keith.
Coma, a brain-dead Indian who can't see, hear, smell, taste, touch, or talk. But he's got the best instincts of any cop alive. Brought to you by Old Goat Urine, where we've been perfecting the art of brewing since about a year ago last March. Tonight on Channel Action News, lingerie models wrestle for free cheese. Details at 11. Brought to you by Old Goat Urine, the authentic taste of German lager brewed in the traditional way.
For the pilot, O'Donohue was able to secure actors like Kelly Lynch, Brian Keith, and Blade Runner's Rutger Hauer as an Old West gunslinger called Kid Satin. He rolls into town wearing a frilly dress in order to provoke others into challenging him to a duel.
CRC is proud to present Billion Dollar Movie.
Hey, look what just walked in.
What's that he's wearing, huh? Some kind of frilly satin thing, huh?
I'll be a flop-eared mule. Looks like he's got on a Calderon lady's frock. You make your daiquiris with fresh bananas. Hey, you. You in a frilly dress. Are you talking to me? Yeah. I'm talking to you, Candy Pants. Make you play.
Is that daiquiri, Mr. Satin?
Just the way I like it.
Fox executives passed on the project, and, you know, not without good reason. There were hints of a good idea here and there, but it seemed unfocused, and more of the bits were misses than hits. And so, TV never made it to TV. But in typical O'Donohue fashion, he blamed the network, saying, quote, "Fox is the scaredest, most frightened group of men I have ever seen in my life, and probably the dumbest, too. Over the next few years, the only steady writing work O'Donohue had was as a columnist for the music magazine Spin, using the platform to mercilessly skewer everything that would anger him. And yet, it was everything that angered him. Perhaps his, at the same time, saddest, funniest, and most profound quote came from one of his Spin columns. The person in the most pain wins. For most of his life, Michael O'Donohue suffered from terrible, debilitating chronic migraines. They affected his work and his relationships, both personal and professional. Some colleagues felt the migraines were responsible for his fiery temper. Others thought it was the other way around. On November 8, 1994, O'Donohue got out of bed, seemingly having another intense headache. His wife, former SNL band leader Cheryl Hardwick, recalled that his eyes were blood red and she could see lightning bolts behind his eyes. 3 hours after arriving at the hospital, Michael O'Donohue was pronounced brain dead after suffering a massive cerebral hemorrhage. His wake, held a few days later, was more like a dinner party. Friends swapping stories, sharing memories of both good times and bad, and some enemies were there too. He had a lot of them. There was one small touch added to the get-together, something that O'Donohue would have definitely approved of. Displayed at the wake was a copy of an X-ray taken of O'Donohue's brain after his cerebral hemorrhage. A few attendees felt that was in bad taste, which is exactly why O'Donohue would have approved.
Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast has just been cleared to land. As we start our descent, please make sure your seat backs and tray tables are in their full upright position. Make sure your seatbelt is securely fastened and all carry-on luggage is stowed underneath the seat in front of you or in the overhead bins. We hope you had a safe and enjoyable listening experience. If you have any comments, go to thedeepdivepodcast@gmail.com and drop us a line. Any clips used in the podcast are meant for educational purposes only and not to infringe on any existing copyrights. Thanks for flying, an Automaton Studios production.